He used to sneak nervous glances at guys sometimes, at Jace, or Shadowhunters visiting the Institute, or mundanes in the busy New York streets. Now, when Magnus was in a room, it was difficult for Alec to notice anybody but him. Did Magnus still notice men were handsome, or think women were beautiful? Alec felt a sharp prickle of nerves at the thought of how many people might be delighted if Alec did fail this relationship test. Alec pulled his hoodie a little lower and followed at a distance. Magnus then turned into an apothecary and began to shop for herbs. After that, he stopped and talked to a violet-haired fairy asking for gold to feed his pet basilisk. Next, he went to the opposite stall and spent what felt like an hour haggling for what looked suspiciously like human hair. Alec trusted that Magnus knew what he was doing. Magnus exuded confidence with such little effort. He seemed always in control of every situation, even when he wasn't. It was one of the things Alec admired most about him. Alec crept down the adjacent street when Magnus went on the move again. He was far enough back not to arouse suspicion, but only 5 bounding steps away. He watched not only his boyfriend, but everyone around him, from the group of dryads trying to lure Magnus to their tent, to the scrawny young pickpocket with a crown of thorns on her head, not so innocently trailing Magnus. When the girl made her move, Alec did as well, catching her sticky fingers just before they slid into Magnus's pocket. Alec swooped in and yanked her in between 2 stalls so quickly no one noticed. The fairy girl twisted away from him so violently that one of his gloves slipped off, and she saw his runes. The pale green flush drained out of her skin, leaving her gray. "Je suis désolée," she whispered, and on Alec's look of incomprehension, "I'm sorry. Please don't hurt me. I promise I won't do it again." The girl was so thin Alec could encircle her wrist with his thumb and forefinger. Fairies were seldom the age they appeared, but she looked as young as his brother, Max, who had been killed in the war. "Shadowhunters are warriors," his father said. "We lose, and we fight on." Max had been too young to fight. He would never learn now. Alec always worried about his sister and his parabatai, who were both reckless and fearless. He had always been so desperate to protect them. It had never occurred to him that he had to be on guard to shield Max. He had failed his little brother. Max had been almost as skinny. He used to stare up at him just as this girl was doing, his eyes big behind his glasses. Alec struggled to breathe for an instant and looked away. The girl did not try to seize this opportunity to slip from his slackened grasp. When he glanced back at her, she was still staring at him.
Shadowhunter? She asked. "Are you all right?"
Alec shook himself out of the daze. "Shadowhunters fight on," his father's voice said in his head.
"I'm fine," he told the girl, his own voice a little hoarse. "What's your name?"
"Rose," she said.
"Are you hungry, Rose?"
The girl's lip trembled. She tried to run away, but he grabbed her shirt. She slapped his arm and seemed to be about to bite him when she saw the fistful of euros in his hand. Alec handed them to her.
"Go buy some food."
No sooner had he opened his palm than the euros disappeared. She did not thank him, only nodded and scampered away.
"And stop stealing," he called after her.
Now he was out of the money he'd brought with him. As he left the New York Institute, duffel bags slung over his shoulder to begin this trip, his mother had chased him out and pressed money into his hands, even though he'd tried to refuse it.
"Go be happy," she had said.
Alec wondered whether he'd been scammed by the fairy girl. She might be hundreds of years old, and fairies were well known for their love of scamming mortals, but he decided to believe that she was what she seemed, a scared, hungry kid, and it made him feel happy to have helped. So the money was well spent. His father had not liked it when Alec announced he was leaving the Institute to go on a trip with Magnus.
"What has he told you about us?"
Robert Lightwood had asked, pacing Alec's room like a distressed cat. His parents had once been followers of Valentine,
the evil shadow hunter who had started the recent war. Alec imagined Magnus could tell him some stories about them, if he wanted.
Nothing, Alec had replied angrily. He's not like that.
And what has he told you about himself? Robert asked.
When Alec was silent, Robert added,
Nothing as well, I imagine.
Alec did not know what expression he wore in that moment, how afraid he might have looked. But his father's face softened.
Look, son, you can't think there's any future in this, he said. Not with a downworlder or a man. I understand you feel like you have to be true to yourself, but sometimes it's best to be wise and take a different path, even if you feel tempted. I don't want your life to be more difficult than it has to be. You're so young, and you don't know what the world is really like. I don't want you to be unhappy.
Alec stared at him.
What about lying? It's supposed to make me so happy. I wasn't happy before. I'm happy now. How can you be? Telling the truth makes me happy, Alec said. Magnus makes me happy. I don't care if it's difficult.
There had been so much sorrow and worry on his father's face. Alec had been scared his whole life of putting that expression on his face. He'd tried so hard to avoid it.
Alec, his father had whispered, I don't want you to go.
Dad,
Alec had said, I'm going.
A reflex response interrupted his time within his memories as his eyes caught Magnus's red velvet blazer flash by in the distance. Alec returned to himself and hurried in the direction he'd seen the jacket go. When he caught up, he saw Magnus turning into a dark alley behind a row of stalls, and then a figure in a cloak appeared from a hiding place and carefully followed Magnus down the alley. Alec did not have time to slowly follow. He'd already lost sight of Magnus and would soon lose sight of the cloaked figure as well. He broke into a run, squeezing in between a vampire and a parry locked in an embrace and pushing aside a group of werewolves rolling sticks. He reached the entrance of the alley and pressed his back against the wall. He peered around the corner and saw the figure halfway down the alley, headed for Magnus's unprotected back. He knocked an arrow onto his bow and swung inside the alley. He spoke just loud enough for his voice to carry.
Don't move. Turn around slowly.
The cloaked figure froze, its hands slowly reaching outward as if to comply with his orders. Alec inched closer, moving to his left to get a better view of the person's face. He just caught a glimpse of a narrow chin, human, a woman by the looks of it, with a sandy complexion, when she whirled toward him, her fingers outstretched. Alec staggered backward as a bright flash slammed into him, obscuring his vision with white static, save for the woman's shadow, a dark stamp superimposed on the dazzling light. He loosed the arrow blind, trusting his training to keep his aim steady. The arrow leaped from his bow and was about to hit its mark when she somehow blurred out of its path. Blurring was the only way to describe it. One moment his arrow was flying toward her, the next her silhouette had twisted and stretched, and she was standing at the opposite wall of the alley. The woman blurred again, appearing right next to him. Alec leaped away, barely avoiding the slashing blade of a sword. He blocked another attack with his bow. Adamus-treated wood clattered against metal, and Alec, still half-blind, swung his bow low and hooked his assailant's ankles, sweeping her off her feet. He raised his bow high in the air and was about to bring it down on her head when she blurred away again, this time reappearing at the entrance to the alley. A gust howled past behind her and whipped her cloak sideways. Part of her hood flapped back, revealing the left half of her face under the light of the lamppost. A woman with deep brown eyes and thin lips. Straight, shoulder-length black hair fell down the side of her face and curved around her chin. The blade she carried was a Korean samgakdo, three-sided, the kind designed to inflict irreparable damage on human flesh. Alex squinted. Her face looked completely human, but there was something peculiar about it. It was her expression. There was a strange blankness to it, as if she were always gazing off into a faraway place. A screech of metal grinding against brick pierced the air behind him. Alec's attention flickered for an instant. The mystery woman took advantage of this slight distraction. She twirled her sword over her head while calling out words in a language Alec didn't understand, and then pointed it at him. Orange spiraling light shot from its tip, and then the ground at his feet erupted, nearly knocking him over. Alec dove away, pulled another arrow out of his quiver, and knocked it. He brought his aim up to where she had last stood, but she was gone. Alec swept the bow across the entrance of the alley, and then caught sight of his target crouching on the lip of a building ledge. He loosed the arrow and was on the move, bursting out of the alleyway almost as fast as the arrow could fly. The woman blurred and reappeared on a higher ledge of the same building. The arrow clanged against the stone. The cloaked woman jumped, rolling gracefully across the roof of a stall, and she came up running. She began to bound across the tops of the stalls. Alec gave chase, sprinting down the path behind those stalls, jumping over garbage bags and bins of goods, ropes and stakes and crates. The woman was fast, but Alec's speed drew from the power of angels. He was gaining. The woman reached a dead end at the edge of the market and blurred to the ground. She began to call out more demonic language, and the air before her shimmered and tore. The outlines of a rough portal began to emerge. Alec drew an arrow and held it between his fingers. He lunged at her, and she turned toward him, expecting an attack. Instead, the sharp edge of the arrow pierced her cloak, pinning her to the side of a market stall. "Gotcha!" Alec drew his bow fast, another arrow pointing dead center at her. The woman shook her head. "I don't think you do." He kept his eyes trained on her weapon. This was his mistake. Light blasted from her other hand, and Alec felt himself flying, flailing, falling. He saw the wall barreling straight at him and twisted his body so his feet struck first. He flipped forward, landing in a crouch in the mud. He shot up, his bow miraculously not broken, and he reflexively moved to bring it back into position. The woman, the warlock, had disappeared. All that was left were the remnants of the portal as it closed and blinked out of existence. Alec kept his bow drawn as he pivoted in a full circle. It was only after he was sure she was gone that he let his guard down. This woman was a warlock, but also a trained fighter. She was a serious threat. "Magnus," Alec breathed. It suddenly occurred to him that there was no guarantee the warlock was working alone. What if she had been trying to lure him away from Magnus? He backtracked to the alley, barreling through the narrow path, not bothering to hurdle any of the things in his way as he uprooted stakes and collapsed tents. Outraged shouts from the people of the Shadow Market followed him as he went. Thank the angel, Magnus looked perfectly safe, having emerged at the other end of the alley without noticing anything, and having made his way to an unobtrusive corner nearby, where he stood talking to a disreputable-looking mundane wearing a trench coat and sunglasses. As soon as the man caught sight of Alec, he startled and bolted away. Alec understood that Downworlders and Shadow Hunters didn't always get along, but he was beginning to take the Shadow Market's attitude personally. Magnus beamed at Alec and waved him over. Alec felt his own stern expression soften. He worried too much. But there always seemed a lot to worry about. Demon attacks, trying to protect the people he loved from demon attacks. Strangers trying to make conversation with him. Sometimes all the thoughts seemed to press down on his shoulders, an invisible burden that Alec could hardly bear. One that couldn't be laid down. Magnus stood with his hand reached out to Alec. His jeweled rings gleamed, and he looked for a moment wild and strange, but then he smiled tenderly. Alec's affection and feeling of sheer luck that he'd earned Magnus's affection back overwhelmed him. "Hey, honey," said Magnus, and it was a little marvelous that he meant Alec. "What's new?" "Well," said Alec, "someone was following you. I chased her off. She was a warlock. A warlock pretty ready for a bite, too." Magnus asked, "Someone from the Crimson Hand?" "I'm not sure," said Alec. "Wouldn't they send more than one person if they have a whole cult?" Magnus paused. "Usually, yes." "Did you find what you were looking for?"
"Sort of."
Magnus linked elbows with Alec, careless of the mud on Alec's clothes, and pulled him along.
"I'll tell you every detail when we get home, but the main thing is, we're off to Venice."
"I was kind of hoping," said Alec, "that we could rest and go to Venice tomorrow."
Yes, yes, said Magnus. We'll sleep in, and then it will take me ages to pack, so we'll leave tomorrow evening and be there by the morning.
Magnus, Alec laughed. Is this a dangerous mission, or are we still on vacation?
Well, I'm hoping a little bit of both, Magnus said. Venice is especially beautiful this time of year. What am I saying? Venice is especially beautiful any time of year.
Magnus?
Alec said again. We're leaving in the evening and getting there in the morning? Aren't we taking a portal? We are not, said Magnus. The Crimson Hand is tracking portal use, according to Tessa. We will have to rough it like mundanes do, and take the fanciest, most luxurious train available on a romantic overnight through the Alps. You see the sacrifices I'm willing to make for the sake of safety. Shadowhunters would just use the permanent portals in Idris to transfer through, Alec pointed out. Shadowhunters have to worry about justifying their expenses to the Clave. I do not. Get ready. No mission is so dangerous it isn't worth doing in style.
Chapter 7. The Orient Express. They slept in, and then it took most of the day for Magnus to pack. Magnus summoned some extra clothes for Alec from one of his favorite boutiques for unforeseen emergencies. Alec protested that he didn't want anything too fancy, but Magnus couldn't be stopped from summoning him several beautiful sweaters without any holes in them, as well as a tuxedo he promised Alec was absolutely necessary. Breakfast came from the bakery down the street. Lunch came from the trattoria the other way on the same street. Finally, they took an unromantic but practical taxi to the Gare de l'Est, where he had the enjoyable experience of seeing Alec's eyes widen as the luxurious blue and white train cars of the Orient Express pulled up, coming to a stop with a long, pronounced hiss. Several liveried men and women spilled out and began to assist the waiting passengers with their luggage. Alec fiddled with the retractable handle of the rolling garment bag Magnus had made him organize his things into. He'd watched Alec stuff a shapeless duffel bag with wadded-up laundry until he had been seized by a great madness, had summoned several very nice pieces of luggage from his own matched purple set, and had stood watchful while Alec packed them carefully with his nicest and most appropriate outfits. Now Alec set his own bag down and came over to Magnus. He squared his shoulders and prepared to heft Magnus's largest suitcase up onto the steps of the train.
No, no, said Magnus. He kept the tip of his hand gently on the top of the lead bag and looked around with an expression of polite befuddlement.
Soon, one of the handsomely dressed porters appeared, held out his hand for Magnus to provide him with their tickets, and took control of the entire luggage situation. Magnus felt mildly guilty when the young man grunted in surprise, straining to carry the bags up the steps, but generous tipping would make up for a lot. They were escorted down the length of a richly detailed sleeper car. The plush carpeting, mahogany-accented walls, and ornate brass railings and fixtures reminded Magnus of the years he had spent with Camille Belcourt, his vampire paramour. Camille. When their relationship ended, the Orient Express train hadn't even started running yet. Now it was a tourist's throwback. Still luxe, still comfortable, but hearkening back self-consciously to an era that, for almost everyone alive today, was the almost unimaginably olden days. Magnus returned himself to the present moment. For Alec, the Orient Express wasn't a nostalgic throwback or a distant fond memory, but an adventure in the present moment. An adventure of grand meals taken among a forest of snow-capped mountains. An adventure of sleeping in a comfortable bed while still feeling the rhythmic, regular thump of the train over the track. They reached their assigned cabin in the corner near the end of the sleeper car. True to his word, Magnus had sprung for the fanciest option available, a large suite with a sitting room in front and a bedroom behind. In between the two rooms was a small bathroom with a shower surrounded by glass walls. Lacquered rosewood walls and Turkish accents gave the whole suite a decadent feel. Magnus deeply approved.
Our grand suites are all decorated in the style of cities along our route, the porter said,
still struggling to carry Magnus's luggage inside.
This one is Istanbul.
Magnus gave him the generous tip he deserved for his efforts, then closed the door behind him and spun to face Alec, just as the train jolted into movement around them.
What do you think?
Alec smiled.
Why Istanbul?
The Paris suite and the Venice suite seemed silly. We've had a lot of Paris, and we're just about to have a lot of Venice.
So, Istanbul.
They sat on the couch in the sitting room and watched the scenery go by. The train was picking up speed. Within minutes, it was out of the station and slipping out of Paris. The cityscape gave way to residential neighborhoods until finally they were speeding through rolling green hills and soft fields of dying lavender in the French countryside.
This is...
Alec gestured at their surroundings.
This is...
He blinked, unable to find words.
Isn't it great?
So, let's get dressed and go get dinner. We can explore the rest of the train, too.
Yes, said Alec, still struck mostly dumb. Dinner. Yes. Good.
What do you wear to dinner on this kind of train?
He leaned over the garment bag as Magnus began unfolding it.
Can I get away with just a nice jacket and jeans?
Alec, Magnus admonished him. This is the Orient Express. You wear a tuxedo.
Where tuxedos were concerned, Magnus had learned over decades to be a purist. Trends came and went, and he loved bright colors and showiness, it was true. But the dinner jackets he had brought for himself and Alec were black, with grosgrain peak lapels and a two-button front. The bow ties were black. Alec had no idea how to tie one.
Where would I have ever needed to wear a bow tie before in my life? Said Alec.
Magnus conceded the point and tied Alec's for him, without the teasing that they both understood at some level that Alec deserved. The secret of the tuxedo, Magnus knew from many decades of experience, was that every man looked good in a tuxedo. If you were already a very attractive man, like Alec, you would look very, very good in a tuxedo. Magnus briefly allowed himself a moment of reverie to simply take in the sight of Alec in black tie, fiddling with the studs in his shirt. Alec caught his eye, and a slow, shy smile emerged as he realized Magnus had been looking. Alec owned no cufflinks, of course. Magnus had so many ideas for cufflinks to buy Alec in the future, but on short notice, he'd found a pair of his own with a bow and arrow motif, and now provided them to Alec with a flourish.
What about you? Said Alec, doing up his cuffs.
Magnus went back into the garment bag and withdrew two enormous square-cut amethysts set in gold. Alec laughed. They left their cabin and were about to join the throng of like-minded mundanes headed toward the restaurant car when a giddy nymph rushed past them toward the rear of the train. A moment later, a small group of visibly drunk sprites pushed their way past Alec, heading in the same direction. Alec tapped Magnus on the shoulder.
Where do you think all the downworlders are going?
Magnus looked over just in time to see two werewolves enter the next car. When they opened the door, loud singing streamed out. Magnus was hungry, but distractible.
Sounds like a party.
Let us follow the siren song. They followed the downworlders and poked their heads into the back bar, in the last car of the train, which indeed seemed to be hosting a party in full swing. The decor reminded Magnus of the speakeasy he'd owned during Prohibition. A full-size bar counter hugged the right side, and plush purple sectional sofas occupied the other. In the center of the car, a grand piano was being played by a dapper-looking man with a beard and goat legs. A siren wearing a dress made from swirling water lounged on top of it, entertaining the audience. A group of brownies huddled in the corner, one of them strumming a twisted instrument that looked like a lute carved out of a branch. Two pukas were smoking pipes near the window, admiring the landscape. A purple-skinned warlock was playing dice with some goblins. Above the bar was a sign reading, "No biting, no fighting, no magic." The mood in the car was festive, relaxed. Despite the sheer number of downworlders, they all seemed to know each other.
"Where you headed?" Magnus asked a goblin.
"To Venice," said the goblin. A bunch of other goblins in various parts of the car yelled, "To Venice!" back. He hoisted his mug, which hissed and foamed alarmingly. "To the party!"
"What party?" asked Magnus as the goblin clocked Alec behind him.
"No, no," the goblin said. "No party. I'm 700 years old, I get confused."
Alec had clocked the goblin right back.
"Maybe," he said quietly into Magnus's ear, "we should go to the restaurant."
Magnus was relieved and embarrassed and annoyed and grateful all at once.
"I think that's an excellent idea."
Once the door was safely closed between them and the bar car, Alec said, "Are there always this many downworlders on trains?"
"Not usually," Magnus said.
"Not unless they're going to some big downworlder party in Venice that no one thought to tell me about, which they are in this case."
Alec didn't say anything. Neither of them mentioned that without Alec, Magnus would be on his way to that party right now. Magnus wanted to tell Alec that he didn't care about a party, that he was happier to have dinner with Alec, because Alec mattered, and some party didn't. Really. They passed two more lounge cars, a champagne car and a viewing car, before reaching the restaurant car. A host met them at the entrance and escorted them to an elegantly draped booth in the corner. A small brass chandelier above them bathed the table in a warm yellow glow, and the table was set with an intimidating number of different forks, spoons, and knives at various orientations to the plates. Magnus ordered a bottle of Barolo and swished the drink as they admired the scenery rolling by outside their window. Dinner was noirmoutier lobster, oven-baked with a drizzle of butter and lemon juice. There was a plate of caviar-laden potatoes served on the side. Alec was dubious of the caviar. Then he looked embarrassed about being dubious of the caviar.
"I just always assumed people ate it because it was expensive."
"No," said Magnus. "They eat it because it's expensive and delicious, but it's complicated. You have to eat it slowly, really experience the subtlety and the complexity." He took a piece of potato, topped it with sour cream and a healthy dollop of caviar, and popped it into his mouth. He chewed slowly and deliberately, eyes closed. When he opened his eyes again, Alec was gazing intently at him, nodding thoughtfully. Then his expression broke into laughter.
"It's not funny," said Magnus. "Here, I'll make you one."
He assembled another potato and fed it to Alec from his fork. Alec copied Magnus's performance, chewing with great exaggerated movements and rolling his eyes back in his head in mock ecstasy. Magnus waited. Finally, Alec swallowed and opened his eyes.
"It really is good, actually."
"See?
Do I have to do the eye rolling every time?"
"It's better with the eye rolling.
Wait, look."
Alec gave a gratifying, wondering, "Oh," as the train emerged around a bend into the heart of the French countryside. Dense, dark green forest framed mirrored lakes, and in the distance, white snow-capped mountains watched over the landscape. Closer, a rocky promontory rose like the prow of a ship from the distinctive, tidy grid of bright vineyards below. Magnus watched the landscape, then Alec's face, then the landscape again. Seeing this with him was like seeing the world made new. Magnus had been through the Parc de Morvan before, but for the first time in a long while, he felt wonder too.
"At some point," said Alec, "we'll cross the Idris Wards, and the whole train will jump from the near border to the far border in an instant. I wonder if we'll be able to tell."
There was a yearning note to his voice, though Alec had not lived in Idris since he was small. The Nephilim always had some place they could return to, no matter what, a country of enchanted forests and rolling fields, and in its center a city of shining glass towers, given by the angel. Magnus was a man with no homeland, and had been for longer than he could remember. Odd to see the compass of Alec's soul swing around surely and point home. The compass of Magnus's soul spun freely within him, and he'd long been used to that. Their hands lingered together, Magnus's fingers curling around Alex as they looked out at heavy clouds rolling in from the east. Magnus pointed at one of the clusters of storm clouds.
That long one looks like a serpent that tied itself into a knot. That looks like the croissant I had this morning. That one, a llama, I guess? Or possibly my dad? Bye, Dad. Hope not to see you soon.
He blew a sarcastic kiss. Is this like the thing with the stars? Said Alec. It's romantic to name the stuff you see in the sky?
Magnus was silent.
You can talk about him if you want, said Alec.
My father the demon, or my stepfather who tried to kill me? Magnus asked.
Either.
I don't want to put us off our lobster, said Magnus. I try not to think about either of them.
He seldom mentioned his father, but after Johnny Rook's information, Magnus couldn't get him off his mind. He kept considering what it might mean for his father to be the demon worshipped by the Crimson Hand.
I was thinking about my dad yesterday, Alec offered hesitantly. He told me I should stay in New York and pretend I was straight. Well, that's what he meant, anyway.
Magnus remembered one long, cold night, in which he had to stand between a family of terrified werewolves and a group of shadow hunters, Alec's father and mother among them. There was so much hate and fear in the world, even among those chosen by the angel. He looked into Alec's face and saw the doubt and fear Alec's father had put there.
You don't talk about your parents much, said Magnus.
Alec hesitated. I don't want you to think badly of my dad. I know he's done things in the past, that he was involved in stuff he's not proud of.
I've done things I'm not proud of myself, Magnus murmured, not trusting himself to say more. In truth, Magnus did not like Robert Lightwood, and never had. In any other universe, he would have thought it was impossible to start. But in this universe, they both loved Alec. Sometimes love worked, past any hope of change, when no other force in this world could. Without love, the miracle never came.
Magnus lifted Alec's hand to his mouth and kissed it. Robert couldn't be a complete monster. He'd raised this man as his son, after all. They finished their dinner in companionable silence, pausing to watch the sun set the mountains in the distance on fire as it dipped below their peaks. The first of the stars began to pierce the darkening sky. The server came and asked if they wanted dessert or perhaps a digestif. Magnus was about to ask about the options available when Alec, a small gleam in his eye, gave the man a bright smile. Actually, he said, I think we're going to have some of the champagne waiting in our stateroom. Shall we, Magnus? Magnus had actually frozen, with his mouth hanging a little open. He was used to two very distinct Alex, the confident shadow hunter and the shy, uncertain boyfriend. He wasn't sure about the Alec with the gleam in his eye. Alex stood and held out his hand to draw Magnus out of his chair. He gave Magnus a little peck on the cheek and kept his hand. The server gave a sideways polite nod and a small, understanding smile.
Indeed. I bid you both bon nuit, then.
As soon as they reached their cabin, Alec shucked off his jacket and headed for the bed. Magnus felt a flutter deep in his chest. There wasn't much sexier than a man in a tuxedo shirt, and Alec filled his out exceptionally well. Silently thanking the angel Raziel for all the cardio shadow hunters had to do, Magnus conjured up a chilled bottle of Paul Roget and placed it on the counter. He raised two glasses and smiled as they filled on their own, leaving the cork intact in the bottle even as the level of champagne lowered. He joined Alec on the bed, offering him a glass. Alec accepted.
To being together, said Magnus. Anywhere we want.
I like being together, said Alec. Anywhere we want.
Santé, said Magnus.
They clinked and sipped, Alec looking at Magnus over the rim of the glass with that gleam in his eye. Magnus could no more resist Alec with that look than he could resist mischief, adventure, or a beautifully cut coat. He leaned forward, pressing his lips to Alec's, which were full and soft. A deep shiver went through Magnus. He could taste the crisp, tart wine in Alec's mouth as he swept his tongue over Alec's lower lip. Alec gasped and opened his mouth to Magnus's exploration. He looped his arm around Magnus's neck, his hand still gripping the champagne glass, arching his body up so the stiff pleats of their tuxedo shirts scratched together. Blue fire sparked, and the champagne glasses were suddenly on the nightstand next to the bed.
"Oh, thank the angel," said Alec, and pulled Magnus down on top of him.
It was bliss. Alec's lean arms were around Magnus, his kisses firm and deep and bone-melting. Alec's strong body held Magnus's weight with no effort at all. Magnus relaxed, sinking deeper into the long, slow kisses, into the feel of Alec's hands in his hair. They were still kissing as the train's smooth glide hitched and the carriage jerked hard. Magnus tumbled aside and found himself on his back. The champagne flutes had flown off the nightstand onto the bed, spilling sparkling wine over both of them. He glanced over and found Alec blinking champagne out of his eyelashes.
"Oh, be careful," said Alec, grasping Magnus's arms and hauling him out of the bed.
The sheet was soaked, and Magnus had fallen onto a glass, crushing it. Magnus realized that Alec had been concerned Magnus might be cut. He hesitated, caught more off guard by the concern than by broken glass.
"I should call to have the sheets changed," said Magnus.
"We could go to the viewing car to wait."
"I don't care," Alec said, uncharacteristically sharp. After a moment, he calmed. "I mean, yes, that would be fine."
"Nice." Magnus reviewed the situation and decided that, as often happened, the solution was magic. He waved his fingers and the bed changed itself, sheets fluttering in the air amid a shower of blue sparks, then settling down so the bed was again a smooth stretch of snowy white. Alec was taken aback by the sheets and pillows suddenly becoming a disarray of linen flying around in the air, and Magnus took the opportunity to shrug out of his jacket completely and undo his bow tie. He stepped toward Alec and whispered,
"I think we can do better than fine."
They kissed, and instead of guiding him toward the bed, Magnus pulled his boyfriend toward the shower by the loops of his trousers. Surprise touched Alec's face, but he followed easily.
"Your shirt's covered in champagne," Magnus explained.
Alec's eyes flickered down to Magnus's shirt, which had gone translucent. Alec flushed slightly as he murmured,
"So's yours."
Magnus smiled, pressing the curve of his mouth against Alec's.
"Excellent point."
He made a small gesture, and hot water began to spray from the shower, drenching them both. Magnus could see the faint dark curves of runes beneath the thin, soaked material of Alec's shirt. Silver points of light and water glittered in the tiny space between them. Magnus put his hands on Alec, peeling Alec's shirt and undershirt off his body and over his head. Streams of water sparkled on the surface of Alec's bare chest, tracing along the grooves of his muscles. Magnus drew Alec closer to him and kissed him as he undid the studs of his own shirt with his free hand. He felt Alec's strong hands on his back, the thin and thoroughly wet shirt almost no barrier at all, and yet far too much of a barrier. Magnus dipped his head and ran his mouth down the wet line of Alec's neck to his bare shoulder. Alec shuddered and pinned Magnus up against the glass wall. Magnus was having real trouble getting his shirt undone. Alec caught his mouth, swallowing Magnus's moan. The kiss was deep and urgent, their mouths sliding together, as hungry as their wet hands. As Magnus tried to concentrate on fine motor control, he noticed a strange shimmer in the air outside the shower, near the ceiling. He felt Alec freeze when he noticed the new, different tension in Magnus's body. Alec followed Magnus's line of sight. A pair of sinister, glowing eyes blinked at them through the steam.
"Not now," Alec whispered against Magnus's mouth. "You have to be kidding me."
Magnus murmured a spell against Alec's lips. Steam fountained out of the top of the shower and gathered around the shimmer. Through the haze emerged the outline of a giant centipede-shaped creature. The Drivok demon lunged. Magnus snapped several more sharp words, these in demonic Thonian. The shower walls immediately frosted and hardened just as the Drivok demon let loose a jet of corrosive acid in their direction.
Alec pulled Magnus to the ground and dove out of the shower, sliding along the wet floor and slamming into the wooden closet doors on the other side of the wall. Awkwardly, he grabbed at the bottom of one of the doors and wrenched it open. Magnus had no idea why until he saw Alec rise to his feet, Seraph blade in hand.
Muriel!
Before the Dravok could attack again, Alec launched himself toward the ceiling and executed a long forward slice. The two pieces of the demon dropped to the floor behind him and vanished.
It's so weird there's an angel Muriel, Magnus commented. Muriel sounds like a disapproving piano teacher.
He held up an imaginary Seraph blade and intoned at it.
My great aunt Muriel.
Alec turned back to Magnus, shirtless in wet trousers, lit by starshine and the glow of his Seraph blade, and Magnus was briefly rendered speechless by pure physical attraction. Alec said,
The Dravok won't be alone.
Demons, Magnus said bitterly. They do know how to kill the mood.
The window to their cabin exploded inward, showering glass and debris into the room. Magnus momentarily lost sight of Alec in a cloud of dust. He took a step forward and was met by a creature with a long black body, spindly legs, and a domed head extending to an elongated snout. It landed in front of him and hissed, exposing rows of sharp, serrated teeth. Magnus gestured, and a pool of water on the floor surged up to engulf the demon in a large, translucent bubble. The demon became disoriented as the sphere rotated upside down. Then Magnus made a batting motion and flung the ball of water out the window. Instantly, another demon took its place. This insect tried to ambush him from the side, nearly taking a chunk of his leg off with its snapping jaws. Magnus stumbled back toward the bed, flicking his fingers as he retreated, causing the closet doors to swing open and smash into the giant bug as it advanced. The distraction barely slowed the demon down. It hissed, and with a crushing bite broke the wooden doors into pieces. Just as it was about to leap, the harsh white glow of Alec's Seraph blade cut down between its two clusters of eyes, splitting its domed head in half. Alec drew his blade from the body and said,
We need to move.
He scooped up his bow, signaling for Magnus to follow, and they escaped out of the wreckage of their cabin and into an otherwise undisturbed sleeper car. After the mayhem of a moment ago, the hallway's peaceful quietude was strange. All was still, save for the rhythmic clicking of the tracks and the soft classical music playing through hidden speakers in the ceiling. Soft yellow lights swayed the shadows gently in a waltz measured to the train's rhythm. Alec pivoted back and forth, bow at the ready, waiting for the next attack. The eerie quiet held for several more seconds until they heard it. A faint tapping, nearly imperceptible at first, like light rain on a roof. It was soon followed by more of its kind, rattling and thumps growing in frequency and number. Alec aimed his bow upward as the noise grew louder and louder, 100 clicks of nails or claws on metal, as if the train were passing under a thunderstorm.
They're all around us. Get to the next car. Hurry.
Magnus headed to the near door, but Alec called out sharply, That's the way toward the other sleeper cars. There are mundanes there. Magnus changed directions and ran toward the far door, with Alec close on his heels. They moved along the corridor leading to the end car, with a bar full of downworlders. A young werewolf in a beaded dress was making her way down the corridor. She stopped short at the sight of them. 5 hulking Rom demons barreled through the windows on either side, and she screamed. Alec threw himself onto her, shielding her with his own body and stabbing the demon trying to crush them. Another demon's tentacles wrapped around them both, and Alec rolled with the werewolf girl in his arms, scything away the tentacles with his Seraph blade. One of the remaining Roms lumbered toward the sounds emanating from the bar. Magnus sent a blast of scorching light in its direction.
Is that a demon? He heard someone yell. Who invited them?
Someone else said,
Read the sign, demon.
Is everyone all right? Called Magnus.
And a demon seized this split second of distraction and went for him. A nightmare of tentacles and teeth loomed before Magnus. Then the demon exploded into nothing, an arrow in its back. Magnus looked through the haze and the flash to Alec, crouched on the floor with his bow in his hands. The werewolf girl was regarding Alec with some awe.
The dark dust of slain demons and a faint sheen of sweat gleamed on Alec's rune-marked bare skin.
I had Shadowhunters all wrong. From now on, you can ask me to do anything for your fight against demons, the werewolf girl announced with conviction. And I will do it.
Alec turned his head to look at her.
Anything?
Gladly, said the girl. What's your name?
Alec asked.
Juliet.
Are you from Paris?
Asked Alec.
Do you go to the Paris Shadow Market? Do you know a fairy child called Rose?
I am, said the werewolf girl.
I do. Is she really a child?
I thought it was just fairy trickiness.
Next time you see her, said Alec, can you feed her?
The werewolf girl blinked, her expression softening.
Yes,
she said.
I can do that.
What's going on out there?
Asked the goblin they'd spoken to earlier, barging out of the party and into the corridor. His eyes widened.
There's demon gunk all over the place, and a lot of Shadowhunter skin out here,
he called over his shoulder. Alec rose to his feet and went to Magnus, who snapped his fingers and made Alec's still-wet undershirt appear in his hand. Alec grabbed for it with obvious relief. Magnus and the werewolf girl watched, a little sadly, as he put it on. Once his shirt was on, Alec took Magnus's hand.
Stay close to...
Magnus didn't hear the rest. Before he could utter a cry, something looped around his waist, wrenched him off his feet, and tore him out of Alec's grasp. A bone-jarring pain stunned him, forced the breath from his body. He heard the sound of shattering glass and felt hundreds of tiny shards cutting into his skin. The world blinked, and consciousness returned a moment later to the sound of wind howling in his ears and freezing air slapping him in the face. Dazed and disoriented, Magnus looked up and saw the full white moon hovering above the jagged mountaintops. Beneath him, the train was speeding along a bridge. Magnus was dangling in the air above a ravine. All that prevented him from falling to his death was the black tentacle wrapped around his waist. The tentacle was not a huge comfort.
Chapter 8. Speed of Fire. Alec looked, his hand still extended, his heart forgetting to beat, at the empty space where Magnus had been standing just seconds ago. One moment he had been holding Magnus's hand. Now he stood, his hand outstretched toward a window that had become 10,000 tiny jagged shards littering the plush, wine-colored carpet. A shudder passed through Alec. He couldn't suppress the thought of all he had lost in the battle at Alicante. He could not lose Magnus, too. He was meant to be a warrior and soldier, a steady light against the darkness, but the terror that went through him now was visceral and deep, stronger than any fear he'd ever felt in battle. Alec heard a cry, barely perceptible over the sound of the howling wind. He rushed to the broken window. There was Magnus, suspended in the air next to the train. He was in the grip of a creature squatting on top of the train that looked like a tree made of smoke. Magnus was caught in its black branches, his hands pinned by dark tentacles. Below them was a plummeting fall of hundreds of feet. The demon's smoky surface bubbled and rippled in the air. Alec was tempted to put a few arrows into it, but he didn't want to provoke it, not with Magnus in its grasp. Nor could Magnus use magic without his hands free. Alec looked down at the ravine. It was too dark to see the bottom.
Magnus! He shouted. I'm coming!
Wonderful! Magnus yelled back. I'll just hang around until then!
Alec climbed out onto the window frame and steadied himself as the train shook from side to side, silently thanking his dexterity rune for maintaining his balance. He reached up and grabbed the T and E at the beginning of the word International that was blazoned in brass letters affixed to the train car above the windows. All he had to do was pull himself up and swing his legs over onto the roof. It should have worked. Alec had completed similar feats hundreds of times in his training, but the letter T was less well attached than he'd thought, and with a groan, it pulled halfway out of the train, its screws stripped and bent. He managed to get only one leg onto the roof before it broke off completely. He scrambled for purchase, his arms and legs splayed against the curved edge of the train car.
Are you all right?
Magnus shouted.
All according to plan.
Alec began to slide off, one slow inch at a time.
Sheer urgency ran hot through his veins. Desperation tightened his hands to claws. With a force born only of his will to save Magnus, he managed to find some leverage beneath one foot, and with this, he frantically scrambled his way up onto the roof. Before he could uncurl himself and stand up, something large and heavy barreled into him from behind. Tentacles closed around his legs and waist and squeezed. Dozens of small red suction cups pinched through the wet fabric of his shirt, burning his skin. Alex stared into the large, buggy eyes and gaping maw of a ROM demon. It made a wet clicking sound as it snapped at him. Unable to use his bow or reach his seraph blade, Alec used the only weapon he had available. He raised his fist and punched the ROM demon in the face. His fist connected with a buggy eye. His elbow smashed into its snout. Alec battered the demon's face until its tentacles loosened just enough for him to kick out and escape. He fell onto his back and somersaulted into a kneeling position. His bow was out, an arrow knocked, and he shot just as the ROM demon came at him. It blocked the first arrow with a tentacle, but stumbled when the second sank into its knee. It finally stopped its charge when, at near point-blank range, the third punched into its chest. The demon chittered in agony, staggered, lost its balance, and toppled over the side of the train. The bow clattered to the ground. Alec exhaled and put a hand on the train's roof to steady himself. His body burned from dozens of tiny poisonous wounds left by the demon's tentacles. He fumbled for his steely and pressed it to his heart, drawing the Irazi rune. Immediately the tightness in his chest lifted and the numbness subsided. He drew in a harsh breath. Demon poison wasn't easily remedied. This relief was only temporary. He had to make the next few minutes count. He wheeled himself to his feet and focused on Magnus, still in the grasp of some dark octopus-like monster. It was unlike any demon he had ever seen before, and definitely not something he'd read about in the Codex. It didn't matter. It had Magnus, and it was getting away. Alec picked up his bow and gave chase, speeding down the length of the train and hurtling over the gaps between the cars. He kept his eyes on Magnus, intent on not letting him out of sight again. His terror drove him forward with reckless abandon. He barely stayed on the train as it curved around a sharp turn. Several Ravener demons appeared, blocking his path with hissing jaws and poisonous scorpion tails. "It was unusual," said an analytic voice in the back of his mind, "to have so many different demon types attacking together. They tended to stay in packs of their own kind." This meant, almost certainly, that they had been summoned. That there was malicious purpose beyond this attack, directed at them in particular. Alec didn't have time to pursue this insight at the moment, and didn't have time to suffer Ravener demons either. Every second lost meant Magnus got 1 second farther away. He fired arrows while running at full speed, sacrificing some accuracy to keep up. One arrow caught a Ravener in mid-leap, and Alec battered two more off the train with his bow. Another ROM demon got an arrow to the throat. His seraph blade seared through flesh as if it were night air. Alec stood wreathed in ichor and blood and realized he had cut through the whole pack. His body ached in 100 places, and the Irazi rune was starting to wear off. He wasn't done. He set his teeth and staggered forward. The smoke demon was just at the end of the train car. It had stopped moving. Two of its tentacles were still wrapped around Magnus. Four were holding onto the sides of the train near the tracks, and the last two were dragging along the air as if testing the wind. No, the ends of the tentacles were glowing in a light that became more complex as the tentacles moved, remaining in place next to the demon, even as the train rushed on. Alec squinted and realized the light was the red glow of a pentagram, emerging into the air beside the train. He knocked an arrow, aimed at a space in between the monster's two eyes, and loosed it. The arrow bounced harmlessly off the demon's roiling skin. He drew another and struck it again, same result. By now, the pentagram had opened, and the demon was moving Magnus into it. It could drop him into another dimension or some bottomless abyss. Alec drew yet another arrow. This time he aimed at one of the tentacles holding Magnus. He whispered a prayer to the angel and fired. The arrow sank into the tentacle a few feet away from Magnus's body. The monster reared and relaxed its grip just a bit. Magnus didn't waste any time.
and as soon as he had a hand free, began weaving it through the air rapidly. A web of blue electricity flared onto the remaining tentacle holding him. The smoke demon screamed, and its tentacles jerked back, releasing Magnus. The warlock hit the roof of the train with a heavy thud and rolled, beginning to slip over the side. Alec dove forward, sliding along the cold metal perilously close to the edge. He brushed Magnus's fingertips and grasped only air as Magnus tumbled off the train. Alec lunged off the side of the train and grasped a handful of wet material. He grabbed hold of Magnus's shirt in both hands and strained to pull him up, using all the strength he had left. His vision blurred with the effort, but then Magnus was in his arms, blinking his still-stunned golden eyes.
"Thank you, Alexander," Magnus said. "Alas, the octopus monster is attacking again."
Alec rolled them both to the side. A black tentacle slammed into the place they had just been. The tentacle rose to strike again. Magnus shot into a sitting position and threw up his hands, a beam of blue fire slicing across one of the whipping tentacles. Black ichor sprayed as the demon jerked the injured tentacle back. Magnus rose to his feet. Alec started to get up, but a wave of dizziness struck him. The effects of the Arazi rune were almost entirely gone, and the ROM poison was again a corroding agent within his veins.
"Alec!"
Magnus shouted. His hair was wild in the wind whipping across the train's roof. He hauled Alec to his feet, even as the smoke demon moved toward them once again.
"Alec, what's wrong?"
Alec felt for his steely, but his vision was fading. He could hear Magnus calling his name, hear the approach of the demon. There was no way Magnus could both help Alec and bend off the demon at the same time. "Magnus," he thought, "run, protect yourself." The smoke monster lunged, just as a dark shape threw itself between the demon and Alec and Magnus. A woman, her dark cloak and dark hair whipping in the wind. In one hand, she gripped a three-sided sword. It gleamed under the moonlight.
"Stay back," she shouted. "I will take care of this."
She waved a hand. The smoky demon gave a long, crackling squeal, like the sound of wood breaking as it was burned.
"I've seen her before," Alec said, wondering. "It's the woman I bought at the Shadow Market in Paris."
"Magnus!"
Another bolt of sick, poisonous pain coursed through him. His vision dimmed. He felt as though he was being beaten, struck in the stomach, his legs cut out from under him.
"Magnus,"
he said again. The sky began to fail, the stars blinking out one by one, but then Magnus was there, catching him.
"Alec,"
he was saying, over and over, and his voice wasn't at all like Magnus's voice, which was cool and dismissive and charming. It was ragged and desperate.
"Alec, please."
There was a heavy weight on Alec's eyelids. Everything in the world wanted him to shut them. Alec forced them open to catch one final glimpse. Magnus hovering above him, his strange, lovely eyes, the last light Alec had left. Alec wanted to tell him that it was all right. Magnus was safe. Alec had everything he wanted. He tried to lift a hand and touch Magnus's cheek. He could not. The world was so dark. Magnus's face faded and, like everything else, was swallowed by the now starless night sky. Chapter 9. Xinyun. Demonic acid had destroyed half their compartment. In fact, the entire train had suffered a great deal of damage, which had been concealed from the mundane staff and passengers with a clever combination of glamours and dropped words about partying European royalty. Magnus was regrowing the wood frame and incidentally doing a little redecorating when he heard Alec stir. It was only a tiny movement beneath the covers, but Magnus had been waiting for it all night. He turned in time to see Alec stir again. He hastened over to sit on the side of the bed.
"Hey, gorgeous. How are you feeling?" he murmured.
Alec reached out his hand, his eyes still closed. It was a mute but trusting gesture, the gesture of a boy who could always count on loving hands and loving voices when he was sick or injured. Magnus remembered when he himself had turned up at the Institute, summoned there to heal Alec from demon injuries. Isabel had been in a panic, Jace pacing the halls, white-faced.
It had reminded Magnus of times long ago, the memory of Nephilim he had cared for once, and how very much they had cared for each other. Knowing the way Will and Jem loved each other had changed his feelings for Nephilim, and seeing Jace, calm, superior Jace, in pieces over Alec had made him like the boy more.